there, my friend, and welcome to the Ayurveda and Psychology podcast. I am Charlotte Skogsberg, your host for this podcast. I am enchanted to meet and to take you with me on this journey into the human psyche, viewed from the holistic approach of yoga and Ayurveda, and viewed from the modern man approach of clinical psychology and psychoanalysis. So have something nice to drink next to you, maybe a cup of tea, have a seat, or go out for a nice walk in nature, maybe. Enjoy. In this episode that focuses on psychology, I would like to bring us back to the emotional triggers that I spoke about last week, but from a different perspective, which actually sounds more physiological, maybe, to many than psychological. I have spoken many times about the psychological need to feel safe. When we don't feel safe, we are in what is often referred to as the fight or flight mode. Or actually, right, today they would say fight, flight, freeze, fawn. It's a state where we do not learn well because we don't register as well information. And we're more likely to react instead of taking an action in a situation. Physiologically speaking, we relate many conditions of health to this lack of feeling safe. Mentally, we can speak of depression, anxiety, attention deficit, and many other things. Physically, we can relate the digestive problems or sleep to, you know, just name two things to this, which then often actually snowballs itself into more severe conditions, chronic conditions, inflammation, fatigue, hormonal imbalances, and autoimmune diseases, for instance. The reasons why someone is never feeling really safe or just finding it hard to bring themselves into a safe state again varies because it depends on, well, just how we are wired, actually. What I mean by that is, depending on how we learn to see the world from the day that we are born will very much determine how much we feel safe or how difficult we might find it to come back to feeling safe. From a psychological perspective, we can take two concepts that are at work here. That would be our capacity to sense it, so sensation, and our capacity to perceive, so perception. Sensations bring us information from the outside world. We receive the information through our sense organs. Perception is the interpretation of the information. In a simplified way, we could say that sensation would tend to be more of a direct way and therefore more similar between people. However, perception will depend on cognition, so our thought processes, which has in itself been created from past experiences of sensation and perception. The conditioning of a human or an animal is the linking, really, of these two processes. And most probably, I would say that a very famous one, right? The most famous one, maybe, experiment that, you know of, that you probably had not needed to study psychology to know of, is Pavlov and his dogs. He taught his dogs that when the stimulus of a sound informed their sense organs, so the ears, the perception of food got triggered even when there was not yet any food presented to any of the sense organs, so to the eyes or the nose or so. Traumatic experiences from childhood will actually condition a person to perceive things in one way that might be completely different to another human being, especially if it's another human being who did not experience the same things, right? So simply said, what triggers your fear will depend on your past experiences. And so as an adult, we all react very differently to different situations. That is a question of perception. And that's, of course, the reason that we misunderstand each other on a regular basis, really. Especially if we don't know the past of someone. And let's be clear on the fact that often us ourselves, we're not very clear on what triggers us or even why something triggers us. In some ways, we can see that we create our reality depending on how we deal with sensation and perception. Some of us become more thinkers. Now, this would be the perception-oriented people. And some become more feelers, more sensation-related approach. And these two approaches to our direct experience and how we tend to be can actually be called top-down or bottom-up approaches. And depending on the person, we choose the therapeutic tool accordingly. Now, we live in a world that is very dominant in the thinking-oriented. So a lot of people tend to be more thinkers. And even if they wouldn't have been, let's say, naturally, they have been taught to become that way. And that's also why psychology has often been accused to be a little bit too much top-down approach when it comes to healing. And that the more bottom-up therapies are actually more recent ones. The more, well, we become holistic, actually, in how we deal with things, we realize that the bottom-up, coming from the body, let's say, has a lot of benefits that the opposite one might not. So top-down therapies would be, well, I guess the talking cure. So psychoanalysis would be part of that. Although I would argue that it's not really that straightforward when it comes to psychoanalysis. But for sure, cognitive, so CBT and these kind of therapies are absolutely top-down. And bottom-up approaches came in more recent years with the different kind of somatic therapies, sophrology, and of course some of the more out there, let's say, approaches that were created in the 50s and the 60s, even rebirth and things like that, if you've heard of those. But of course, the ancient practices of yoga, of meditation, pranayama, and other tools on the spiritual practice were already bottom-up approaches to healing. Some therapists might say that depending on how you're wired, right, from bottom up or top down, you adapt the therapy accordingly. But I would say personally that we need, of course, a mix of the two. I also believe that people who are too much in one way would benefit from the opposite kind to be more sensitized, let's say, in order to, well, bring it in as a complement. This means that we would teach thinkers how to feel and help feelers how to put words on what they feel. Already Freud actually spoke of this when he classified the neurotic structure in more or less two types, the obsessive-compulsive personality versus the hysteric personality. Right? So it's kind of this, are you stuck in your head or are you overwhelmed by what you are feeling? And obviously, being one way or the other fully is not beneficial for us, right? Both of these makes us feel stuck in how we deal with whatever is going on inside of us, whether it is a physical illness or healing emotionally from something. So, of course, when it comes to trauma that is stuck in the body, the thinkers go more into the obsessive thought pattern and might feel as if they're dealing with it because they're constantly thinking about it. But actually what happens is that they're just in their narrative, and so they're stuck in their freeze mode by being just stuck in the mind. And well, those who are stuck in the feeling state, I would say in a way, and pardon me if I'm generalizing a little bit too much or making it into extreme, but those would be the ones who seems to be triggered emotionally by a lot of things. And then it's impossible to kind of calm yourself down. Like the very sensitive reactions in the body makes them block in their thinking. And so in a previous episode, I spoke on the impact that our emotions have on our physical health, because I spoke about it from the Ayurvedic perspective. Because you see, in Ayurveda, this comes perfectly natural, since there's no separation between emotions and the physical body. In that sense, we would speak of the energetic field, right? I mentioned the five layers inside of us and the fact that each one of the five layers are, of course, impacted by the doshas. And from this psychological perspective, we can actually make that same link when we speak of the nervous system. Because, of course, the nervous system, just like I was speaking about earlier on there, is what brings us into the fight or flight and so on mode. When we're feeling safe or not, it's our nervous system that is deciding. It informs the rest of the body on how we're supposed to be feeling. But often we get stuck on this part, right, with the nervous system, without understanding how it relates to the rest of the physical body. Maybe even more so on how it relates actually to health. And that is where we enter the concept of the vagus nerve. The vagus nerve, which is a part of our nervous system. Hence, of course, the word nerve. It's the most important nerve in the whole system. And it has been given more importance in recent years, because we discovered just how much it impacts us, and it impacts the brain. And many of the diseases related to the brain and the nervous system that happens actually due to disruption of the vagus nerve. And actually, we're probably quite far from knowing all there is to know about this nerve, and which is why, of course, it's so fascinating. More than that, it's a central point in the ancient practices, actually, because the vagus nerve can really be directly connected to the chakra system and the Sushumna Nadi. So in the energetic body, in the energetic field, the pranic body, the system is created through the chakra system and the nadis, which we would translate into nerve endings. And we would say that there are 72,000 nerve endings, according to the texts. But there are three main ones. One that goes along the spine, and then the two that goes on the side, and that basically are directly related to the sympathetic and the parasympathetic mode of the nervous system. So from the yogic perspective, we would speak of the solar and the lunar part of the nervous system, which is, of course, the active and the passive part as well. And then the one in the center, which is actually what we focus on in terms of liberation or enlightenment, awakening the kundalini, would be to allow for the energy, the Shakti, to rise without being blocked along this nadi, Shushumna, along this nerve ending. That main nadi aligns with the spine from the root chakra and all the way up to the crown chakra. And then the kundalini then, as I said, rises along this nadi when it's activated And of course, that whole thing resonates very much with the activity of the vagus nerve. Now, the vagus nerve needs to be stimulated in order to function well. And stimulation of the vagus nerve is what is done in an artificial way, actually through electricity, when we are treating some of these diseases of the brain, such as Parkinson's, for instance. But a natural stimulation happens when we meditate, when we do yoga, and so on and so forth. Because, well, we're allowing for the energy to flow freely. Energy, electricity. And so it's as if they knew back when that it would play an important role in an overall health when we activate and tone, strengthen this nerve. You see, this nerve controls the inflammatory response of our body. And if the tone is low, if the strength is not there of this nerve, our immune system itself is weakened. And we call this vagal tone. So we want it to be toned, right? The same we want a muscle to be toned. When our vagus nerve is toned, strong, it is resilient. It becomes resilient to the different oscillations of the nervous system, of the going in and out of the fight or flight to rest and digest mode. The more resilient the vagus nerve, the stronger our immune system, and the more effective we are to the inflammatory response. Now, here's the thing. No matter how you would intuitively approach the world, you do so without conscious awareness. And for that reason, when all of this is going on inside of you, it's not as if you are thinking that you're doing it. And therefore, you cannot think yourself out of doing it. And when I'm saying doing it, I mean going into the fight or flight mode. So we can't really reason our way out of the stress mode or the anxiety mode. We can use talking, but not about what is making us anxious or stressed so much. Actually, if you would do that, you would probably increase the stress levels. We would instead use talking as a way to maybe bring our focus towards something else. To just take an example here, when it comes to traumatic events in our life that we have not been able to transition, to work our way through. We know this by the reactions that we have when something is triggering us in our day-to-day life that reminds us of the traumatic event, and that our whole system is reacting as if we're back there, right? The system is reacting, the nervous system is. And what we can do then is that we can talk about it, but that might even enhance and actually worsen the traumatic experience in the moment. So when we're using talking about it, what we rather would do would be to talk about something completely different so that the nervous system begins to feel safe again, and then we relax. That's great. But the thing is, it doesn't solve the issue. This is why that kind of mixed approach is more beneficial. So coming from, yes, perception, the thinking mind, and from sensation, the feeling state. So what I tend to do with people when I work on things like this is that instead of kind of making them talk even more about what is going on with them right now because they're in panicking mode, I start with bringing their focus into physical sensations. And I have them go through maybe even several rounds of it until they start to tell me that there are relaxing sensations happening in the body. And one very important is all of a sudden people, for instance, will start to yawn. Then we know, okay, the vagus nerve has been stimulated actually. Might even have stronger reactions with tears coming out. Okay, things are relaxing in the body. And we can use various tools from these more bottom-up therapies in order to make that happen, right? So when I would speak of the ancient practices, this is exactly what yoga, pranayama, and so on and so forth does to us. Now, it can be really, really difficult to use things like meditation, for instance, because if we are stuck in the thinking mode and we sit down to meditate, it might be extremely hard to kind of switch ourselves off. So one of the most important tools in this is actually the breathing exercises that we do. Breathing is a voluntary action that can affect the involuntary functions of the body. And here is where it becomes even more interesting. So we can focus on the vagus nerve very much in order to heal the nervous system through different actions such as breathing. Now, the breathing will have an effect on the vagus nerve, but it will also help us with the link between the immune system and the vagus nerve, which is very much connected to the circulatory system. And the circulatory system is directly impacted by the lymphatic system. The lymphatic system is often directly impacted by the weakened vagus tone. However, the lymphatic system is often the reason and the first sign of inflammation in the body, because the lymphatic system is what truly allows us to get rid of waste products. And in Ayurveda, I've spoken many times about just how important it is to keep the flow going in the body so that nothing can get stuck, because it's when it's getting stuck that the waste stays. This is, of course, the reason that in Ayurveda we would speak of 6 stages of disease, whereas in allopathy or modern medicine, there's just disease or not, right? Because there's manifestation of symptom or not. And as we continue with these talks around the emotional impact on your state of health, you will see that the lymphatic system has an enormous importance, and much more than anyone's ever given it really credit for in the past. When I speak of Ayurveda as being timeless and the importance of using it today, I can relate it to more modern practices. And more specifically, I'm going to go deeper into that with the help of a person that I've been working with over the past couple of years through the osteopathic practices. So if you're interested in understanding the link here between the psychology, osteopathy, and the Ayurvedic approach in order to bring health into your life, then stay tuned for the coming episodes. Thank you so much for choosing to listen to this podcast and this episode. I am very grateful. If you enjoyed this and you think that other people could enjoy this, please help me to spread the word. Share this episode on any channel that you have of social media or messaging. And even more so, I would really appreciate if you know one other person who might benefit from my words today specifically. Take that 1 minute it takes to simply share this episode with one person. Remember that there's a human being on the other side of your phone, of your earpods, of this microphone. And I would love to hear your thoughts on what I've been talking about. So please leave a comment. Send me a message directly if you wish. This is Charlotte. This is me. See you next time. Namaste.